With the fire drill, he laboriously coaxed some moss into flaming life. The light of the flame made him wince, but by narrowing his lids he found he could bear it. When the scraps of meat were half warmed through, Awasan shared them with Jamie, and the two boys ate ravenously. Glorying in the relief from the pain, Jamie was talkative and even cheerful. He did not notice Awasan's silence and preoccupation. "That was the worst thing that ever happened to me," he said. "Most of the time I wished I was dead. But we're okay now, and it won't happen twice. Anyway, nothing else that could happen to us would be half as bad." Awasan could keep silent no longer. "There is something worse," he said reluctantly. "The food's all gone, Jamie. The dogs got starved while we were sick." It was shocking news, and for several minutes Jamie could find nothing to say. Then an idea began to emerge from the confusion of his thoughts. It seemed so clear, so obvious, that he could not understand how it had escaped him for so long. It was perhaps the most important single piece of knowledge that had ever come to him, and it took a near tragedy to drive it home. He had to think about it for a while, but first he did his best to comfort Awasan. "Well," he said as cheerfully as he could, "that's not so bad. We'll just have to go back to Hidden Valley. We're only 30 or 40 miles from it, and we should make it in 2 days." Awasan brightened. "Yes," he said, "that's the only thing to do. I knew we'd have to go back, but I thought that you'd refuse. I'm glad you see the way it is." By now the idea in Jamie's mind had crystallized. He was ready to share it with his friend. "Yes, we'll go back, Awasan," he said, "and we'll stay at Hidden Valley. Stay there as long as we have to. I've learned my lesson. As long as we went along with things the way they were, and never tried to fight against this country, we were all right. But when we set out on this trip south, we were standing up to the barons and sort of daring them. We were going to bulldoze our way through, and we're lucky to be still alive." Awasan looked long into his friend's face. "I never thought you'd understand about that, Jamie," he said at last. "White men don't, as a rule. Most of them think they can beat the Northland in any fight. A lot of them have found out differently and didn't live to tell about it. My people know differently. It's hard to put into words, but I think you understand. If you fight against the spirits of the North, you will always lose. Obey their laws, and they'll look after you." It was a long speech for Awasan, but when he finished, both boys were happier than they had been for many weeks. They were humbler, too. They were ready to return to the tiny cabin in the valley and to abandon their foolish and almost fatal effort to force their will upon the barren lands. They spent the rest of the next day at their lonely camp in the empty plains. Carefully, Jamie gathered up all the meat he could find about the sled, and it was enough for 2 days of half rations. Meanwhile, Awasan had taken 2 broad strips of rawhide, each about 2 feet long. In these he had carefully cut narrow eye slits. Bound around the boys' foreheads, these would serve as makeshift snow goggles. When a half moon rose that night, the boys harnessed up. Soon they were moving north again, back home. The night was still and cloudless, and the cold was sharp. The moon hung low in the sky, and the world was a blue immensity of space. They walked slowly behind the sled, and occasionally one would ride for a while, for they were still weak from the 3 days of snowblind sickness. Towards midnight, the northern lights broke into a riot of color. Curtains of green, yellow, and pale red flamed across the sky, and it seemed to Jamie that he could hear a faint rustling sound, like the swish of silken dresses. Awasan heard the sound too, and for a moment he was puzzled. Then the answer flashed across his mind, his lips set grimly. He turned to Jamie. "Perhaps we've called it quits," he said, "but the fight isn't over yet. That's wind we hear." The memories of the gales that had roared over Hidden Valley in weeks past filled Jamie's mind. "We can't get caught out here," he said urgently. "We've no fuel left and almost no grub." "Perhaps we can make the shelter of the mountain," Awasan replied. The dogs, too, had heard the warning of the approaching storm, and they needed no urging. The boys ran, and the sled careened wildly over the hummocks and little ridges. After an hour of this, they had to stop and rest. The dogs whined anxiously and impatiently, and the faint, far-off rustling sound grew in volume until it began to sound like a distant waterfall. Gray clouds obscured the moon, and the northern lights faded and died away. The darkness grew thicker so that it was hard to see what lay ahead. When the sled moved on, there was already a light breeze blowing, and the temperature had begun to fall abruptly. Awasan automatically noted the direction of the breeze, for he knew in a short time it would be his only guide, and he would have to steer by the feel of it alone. Resting every 15 or 20 minutes, the boys fled northward. The roar of the rising wind now filled their ears, and it was mingled with the throbbing of their hearts. The gale gained power slowly, until they had to pull their parka hoods forward against its bitter touch. The snow in the hollows began to rise above the hard drifts and whirl like ghostly dancers. Frost thickened on the fur trimming of the parka hoods. It had become almost pitch dark. Awasan went ahead to lead the dogs, and when he was a few feet from Jamie, he was completely out of sight. Jamie followed close behind the sled, but several times he almost lost it, and at last he tied himself to it with a length of rawhide line. Stumbling with fatigue, he managed to keep on his feet only by the greatest effort. The roar of the gale was now no longer distant. No longer simply warning them, it burst down out of the darkness with full fury. It rose to a soul-shaking crescendo of sound. The blizzard was upon them.